GonkCast, a long-form discussion podcast about the music of English electronic duo Autechre, album by album, EP by EP. I'm Gabe.
I'm Dan.
And this episode, we're talking Autechre's 1993 debut LP, Incunabula, plus a pair of early Autechre milestones, the Cavity Job EP slash single from 1991, and Lego Feet, the only album that Rob Brown and Sean Booth released under that name before becoming Autechre again from 1991. Normally, we'll just jump right into things, but since it's our first episode, I think we ought to go over what exactly we're trying to accomplish with this podcast. Dan?
Yeah, basically the idea is to work our way through Autechre's entire discography chronologically. We're going to put out an episode every 2 weeks, and each one we'll do a deep dive into the next Autechre LP, plus the EPs and major singles and whatnot from that same era.
Yeah, and on that note, we've cut a bunch of minor releases from the program, just so each episode is kind of about the next big step in the history of Autechre, but we'll always let you know what we're covering next, and we're kind of counting on you, the listeners, to let us know if we've missed anything amazing. Email us, gonkcastpod@gmail.com, and we'll be sure to add those hidden gems to the show. We'd also love to incorporate your Autechre opinions and hot takes into our discussions, so again, gonkcastpod@gmail.com. Message us on Twitter @GonkCastPod. You'll find all that info in the show notes as well. One last bit of housekeeping before we get started, Dan. I think we should explain, you know, who the hell are we and why should anybody care about our opinions on Autechre?
Yeah, well, I guess we should clarify that we're not experts or anything. We're just longtime fans who talk about Autechre all the time anyways and thought, why not make everybody else listen to that and turn it through into a trip through Autechre's entire discography. Plus, it would be really cool to hear from listeners, other people who are obsessed with the band as we are. You know, not a band you run into a ton of, you know, people on the street to chit-chat about with, so...
Yeah, and I think, we've both been wanting to kind of do like a shared trip through Autechre's entire discography together, with or without making a podcast about it, but with the announcement of Sign, which is Autechre's forthcoming LP, got us extremely hyped, I think, to actually get this show on the road. Also, I think we should mention that we are both experimental musicians, and we've spent a lot of time drawing inspiration from Autechre, and I think relating to them on that extra level. You know what I mean, Dan? It's kind of like...
Yeah.
We've gotten inside of it and tried to rip it off. So I feel like that gives us a little extra credibility. but we're also longtime podcast hosts. In fact, if you want to hear us talk about music other than Autechre, you can check out our other podcast, Pop Shield, Perspectives on Music Past and Present. That's available wherever you get your podcast, Pop Shield. Okay, that's enough preamble. Let's get into Incunabula. Dan, what background info do we need to know?
Yeah, so in general, we're going to avoid doing a ton of background info because if you're listening to this podcast, you probably know the basics already. You're probably already a fan. But it's important to note that Incunabula was Autechre's debut LP released by Warp Records in 1993. But that Rob Brown later called it more of a compilation of old material compared to Amber from 1994, which the guys think of as their genuine debut record. Rob has also said that they can now consider both Incunabula and Amber a quote cheesy.
Yeah, but nevertheless, contemporary and current reviews of Incunabula have been pretty ecstatic across the board. It's bolded and sitting at a respectable 3.63 on RateYourMusic.com. AllMusic gave it 4.5 stars out of 5. Pitchfork gave it an 8.2 out of 10, which is kind of like B&M territory almost for them. And it's probably safe to say that it's widely considered a landmark of electronic music, even if it's not as celebrated as some of Autechre's later work. And I don't know, we can talk about this, but it feels like maybe it's because of Autechre's later work, it's almost like underrated at this point. But I think, you know, at the time, it was really kind of a big deal. Finally, I want to mention that Incunabula was preceded by a 12-inch as Lego Feet, the Cavity Job single as Autechre, and a pair of tracks on Warp's iconic Artificial Intelligence compilation. In fact, Incunabula was officially part of the Artificial Intelligence series. But we'll get to some of this stuff later in the episode. Don't want to bury the lead. You know, we want to get right into the main event. Also, we are fully aware of the 2019 release Warp Tapes 89 to 93, but we're probably going to give that its own episode later on down the line. Now, sometimes we'll be big fans of the releases we're discussing, but sometimes they'll be completely new to us. So let's go over our previous familiarity and history with Incunabula. Dan?
Yeah, I love this record. you know, it's definitely not the first Ateca record I heard by any means. You know, that was probably mm-hmm. Tri Repete. But
yeah,
you know, once I fell in love with the band, as I do with most bands I like, I went through the whole discography, and or at least, you know, the major discography, and you know, this is a record I once I heard it, I always like really loved it. It's sort of like the, you know, easy listening kind of Ateca, you know. I think it was kind of easy to get into, you know, as sort of how Tri Repete is, you know. We'll get to that in a couple episodes, but you know, yeah, it's a record I'm real into. And in fact, you know, as we came up with the idea for this podcast, when, you know, when Signs got announced, you know, I decided I was gonna take another trip through the discography. So I was already listening to that, you know, I had started there, and I was gonna spend a few days with it. So I was already you know, well enjoying myself before we even decided to do this.
Yeah, I mean, out of curiosity, do you like, you know, because there are two kinds of like records when you're a big fan of like an artist, you know, is Incunabula the kind of record that you will just throw on sometimes, or is it the kind of record that you really only listen to when you're in like a big Ateca phase? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I get you. I think it's a throw on. Just, you know, I don't have to be in a phase, because it's a pretty, you know, at night I always listen to like instrumental music. I read a lot and stuff, and so Incunabula is like one. It's sort of. Some of the later stuff is so like nuts. It's hard to read during, you know. But this one is one that I actually like do just put on and for reading. And this is one of the ones I can kind of get away listening to in the car with my wife, who does not like Ateca at all. You know, it's you know, normal enough where she won't yell at me, at least for a couple tracks.
Yeah, honestly, I'm in the same boat there. She's gonna love this podcast project that we're doing.
Oh yeah, she, and in fact she said I only know two nerds dumb enough to listen to that. I think she was referring to us.
Yeah, that sounds right. I mean, for me, yeah, I got, you know, really into Tri Repete first, and you know, I guess I was doing probably your typical trip through the like Warp Records thing, where it was like my first exposure to electronic music was like, you know, Aphex Twin mm-hmm. and Boards of Canada and stuff. And then I'm checking out all these juggernauts. I find Tri Repete, absolutely fell in love with it. The next one I went to was Incunabula, and it really, you know, well, we'll get into it, but it's like I strongly prefer Tri Repete, but this one I just loved so much, and spent a lot of time with it. I distinctly remember, I don't know, I must have been like just starting college or something, because I just remember making these like late night drives. I was taking like night classes and just like blasting, you know, Eggshell at full volume with the windows down and stuff. It was just like perfect night driving music. Just loved this record. Always have. I listen to it quite often, actually. It's like, you know, some of the records we're going to talk about on this, especially some of the EPs and stuff on this podcast, I've like maybe listened to once or something. But this one, definitely spent a lot of time with. So as we kind of dive into this record, I want to, you know, we do this on our other podcasts a lot, and we always fail, but I'm going to try again.
Yeah.
One thing that annoys me a lot about every single review of Incunabula and every early Ateca release is that it always is referencing like either A, you can hear the roots of, you know, future Ateca, what they would become, or B, it's not anything like what they would become, you know, contradictory, you know, messages, but it's always for some reason mentioning what future Ateca is. And so I want to like give it an honest shot. Again, we fail at this every time we try to do it, but like, I'm just giving Incunabula its due. Like, let's try at least for just a little bit to have just a conversation about Incunabula on its own merits. All right.
Yeah. I mean, you know, to everyone's credit, I mean, it is difficult. I'm sure most people did not hear this record, you know, in 1993.
Right.
You know, they came to it later. So it is sort of hard to, I mean, and Ateca is like a band that has like become this, you know, juggernaut thing. You know, it's difficult not to do it, but we'll try our best. And if Pop Shield's anything to go by, it'll take us about 10 seconds before we fuck that up.
Yeah. So, and we will get into all that fun stuff as well. But let's start. Maybe you could try to describe the overall sound. If you had to describe this record to a new listener, Dan, how would you describe Incunabula from 1993?
Yeah. You know, a new listener, have they listened to electronic music? I hope at least, you know, I wouldn't want to.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Cause I wouldn't want to start them here, I guess. But I mean, this is like I said, in my little, you know, preview thing, you know, this is sort of the easy listening, Autechre. You know, it's similar to your Warp, early 90s, quote unquote IDM, you know, everybody hates that tag, but yeah, you know, whatever. Yeah. You know, it's got like similarities to, you know, Aphex Twin and everything, like you said. The rhythms here are like, they're not normal in the sense that like you would want these to play in the club and you could dance to them, but they're also like, they make sense, you know, like you can. I think it was, I was reading some reviews, and I think it was Pitchfork that said, you know, it's like, it would confuse your feet, but you could nod your head to it. And I thought that was like pretty, you know, apt, you know, it's like, it's not four, you know, or anything like that. But I mean, it's definitely like, it's not some crazy, you know, Venetian snares, you know, ass thing, you know, that you don't understand. Also here, you've got your... It's human sounding. Oh, I almost fucked it up. I almost went to the future. Right. I mean, we're using like you know, analog synths, but it sounds like real.
I was
going
to say it sounds like hardware.
Yeah,
as opposed
that's
to
the word I was
breaking
for,
the rule real quick. As opposed to software, which becomes their thing later on. Okay, back to not mentioning that. It sounds really hardware oriented. It sounds like pretty. You know, it sounds like pretty much like set it and tweak it as you're just going to ride this groove for 8 minutes or whatever. I mean, there's some knob twiddling going on, but it's pretty like still. It's almost like all the pieces are there, and they're kind of bringing things in, taking things out. Sometimes these like synth pads will kind of like wash over everything. Sometimes everything will drop out, but like these little tinkling hi-hats. But yeah, it's got kind of like that early IDM, early Warp sound. It's got, you know, pretty... I don't know. It's just got like a very, it's got an ambient kind of like wash over the whole thing, I think. I mean, would you describe this record? Because there were times where I was tempted to say something like, you know, there are a lot of pretty intricate beats here, but it's like essentially an ambient record.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's definitely like ambience in it, but it's not like a drone record or anything. I mean, there's definitely percussion, but I get what you mean by that. But, you know, I don't want to lead people on the wrong path.
Yeah. I mean, I guess my thing is that it just feels like so drifting. Like, mm-hmm. It feels like so still and monolithic. Like these, you know, pieces are just like just these big towering, you know, it's got like an architectural feel.
Yeah,
and
I think monolithic is like a great term for it. Like you said, you know, you don't want to use the word term stagnant because that has a negative connotation to it. But they like really are. It's like, you know, a handful of bars or whatever of like a pattern. And that pattern, you know, I mean, some of the songs here are 8 minutes, 9 minutes, whatever.
Right.
You know, that pattern essentially just repeats. But, you know, little things are tweaked, changed. A high pass filter might get brought in or out, right, or whatever. And like you said, you know, maybe the hi hats will become more prominent or drop out or whatever. It's almost like a, you know, like a jam band kind of thing.
Yeah,
you know?
It does have a jam vibe. Yeah. You know, I think what struck me most listening this week was that, you know, I think the best tracks here, like I could mention, like 444 or Bike or Eggshell, they have this amazing contrast between, like I said, really intricate, like complex percussion, like just a lot of rhythm going on. Like, mm-hmm. On 444, it sounds like you're like listening to the inside of like a grandfather clock or something. Like, there's just all these like gears and stuff whirling around your head. But then there's always these like huge, just motionless synth pads or something. I mean, they are doing a very understated melody, you know, often. But they just feel like they're not moving, whereas the rhythm is like moving so fast, and it creates this weird, I mean, just such a weird sensation in my brain where it's like I am feeling very frantic, but also like I'm moving in slow motion, mm-hmm. at the same time. Am I being like too bizarre here? Do you get what I'm saying?
No, I completely get you. I mean, it's sort of like, especially if you like listen in headphones or something, which I think, you know, this is sort of creative for, like, if you, depending on like what you focus on, you could be frenzied or just sort of drifting or whatnot. It's really like, it has a strange like dichotomy in basically the whole record, you know. It's this weird juxtaposition of fast with slow, like intricate rhythm, unchanging or slowly changing pads and whatnot. So yeah, I think you're definitely correct there.
Yeah, I also think that it's, you know, it's weird how understated the melodies are. I guess this is kind of like an Autechre trademark. I don't think that breaks the rule. Maybe it does, but
I'll allow it.
You know, just that, you know, it's not like, I don't know, you listen to like Aphex Twin or something, or Boards of Canada, or a lot of people, it's like, these are some of the greatest like melody writers in music history, mm-hmm. honestly. Like some of Richard D. James' compositions are like so beautiful, you know, like that, what, Avril 14th track that gets played everywhere, mm-hmm. you know, it's like one of the most beautiful piano pieces, and that's just like the kind of composer he is. But Autechre's melodies, especially on this album, are just so minimal. Like sometimes they are just, you know, moving between like two or three notes or something. It's like barely a melody. And I don't know. It's like, do you feel that? Like it's almost lacking a melody, this album?
That's one of the things I love about this record and like Autechre in general, though, you know, like, cause you're right, you know, Aphex, Boards of Canada and all, you know, they have these like a beautiful lush melody, the kind of thing that like, you know, if they were alive, you know, 100 years ago, they would probably have been sort of, you know, composer or
writing sonatas or something.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas Autechre, it just has this like distinctly future feel, you know, like if they were born 100 years ago, I think they just probably wouldn't be making this, you know, they just wouldn't be making music, you know? I love like the minimalism of this record, you know, like how, I mean, it, you know, if you counted the bars that are actually different on this record, you know, it would be such a small number. And, you know, I mean, that continues throughout their career. And I, like you said at the top, you know, we're both experimental musicians. I love like minimalism. I love like playing with just a couple, you know, notes and stuff. And I don't think like, you know, when you say that, like, I think a lot of people think like, oh, it's just because, you know, they're not good at playing an instrument or something, you know, but I think Autechre like uses it in such a way that it's like such a stylistic choice. You know, it doesn't seem like a, you know, a necessity or an amateurism to it at all, you know?
Yeah. And it's really nice here because, you know, it gives you this ability, like on Eggshell, for example, you know, there are points where a melody comes in, you know, for sure. And it's like a pretty, you know, beautiful melody. It's mm-hmm. like kind of transcendent, that, you know, that's like the song in particular that I would just like blast while I was like driving late at night. And I just felt like I was floating, you know, or something. It was like just awesome. And yet if you like, you know, just played that melody on a piano side by side with some like, you know, Richard D. James piece, you would be like, that's the shittiest melody ever. But the thing is, because there's so little melody here, like the lightest touch of it, it is like very, very moving. I mean, when it does come in, it is like, I think kind of mesmerizing. I love like the track, like Matel. I was realizing this podcast is going to get harder.
Oh,
and harder.
I know.
As we go,
I was thinking that too.
Track titles cannot be pronounced, but we're in a pronounceable territory for the most part here. But Matel or whatever, you know, it's almost like psychedelic. It's got like all of these like kind of glitchy, like harpsichord-ish sounds. And it's like quite a hypnotic, you know, it's a melody, but because it's like looping, it's really just kind of, again, suspending you in motion or something like that. But you know what I mean? Like, it's just the light touches of melody that I think, I almost broke the rule, but I just think are kind of stunning here. They're like the crescendo when it's really barely a melody at all.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just such like a great, I don't want to use the word trick that they use, but for want of a better word, I will, you know, like they're masters of it, you know? It makes like such a, you know, they can make like such a small, you know, thing. Like you said, like if you just played it on a regular piano, it wouldn't blow your socks off or anything, but they can use it in such a way that it just like, it cuts through this like minimalism and everything. And just like, I don't know, like transcendent, like you said, it's It's like a corny word to use, but it fits.
Well, speaking of tricks, you know, I wanted to bring something else up, which is like, you know, and this is going to be a struggle on this podcast because we're going to do a lot of gushing about Tucker for sure. But we got to be brave about being critical, you know, when it's called for, or when we're just honestly not, you know, not feeling something or whatever, because I don't think there's anybody that like loves, you know, every period of Autechre equally. But, you know, I was sort of realizing, listening to this like a lot, like over and over again the past 2 weeks preparing for this, you know, do you feel like there is sort of a formulaic quality to this album? Because we were mentioning it earlier how every track seems to have like 5 to 6 pieces, you know, like some loop or something. And they do just kind of like fade in and out, right? And it's almost every track is kind of like the build up, which usually means just like one thing is playing on its own, then the little, you know, hi-hats or something come in, and then it kind of like the bass groan comes in and the high thing comes up, and then you drop a lot of that into like kind of a spacier ambient territory, and then by the end you have it all playing at once. You know what I mean? It's almost like every track almost works the exact same way.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It does. It has that little bit of a formula. But I mean, honestly, and you know, I don't want to just be like I'm sucking up to Autechre or something, but it's kind of a fault with like this era of electronic music, you know, like most of it is sort of like, you know, it's not like Autechre is the only one doing that kind of thing here. I don't know if that's, you know, computers obviously were not like as useful in 1993, you know, like we said, that this really does seem like hardware. You know, I screw around with synths a little bit. I'm, you know, obviously not nearly as adept as Autechre or anything, but it's like much harder to like, you know, change things, you know, in a song or whatever when you have to like move 800 knobs around to get a different sound. You know, it's not like you could just in the middle switch, you know, what you're doing.
It's not like I blame them or whatever, but it gives it like a slightly primitive quality. Again,
I think it's just more of that, you know, minimalism kind of thing.
Well, I wonder, I mean, do you think that this record sounds dated, or has it like entered vintage territory?
I mean, I don't think it sounds dated, you know, that's got a negative connotation. So I'll go vintage, which I think just means dated, but still cool.
Or neither. You could think it just sounds as fresh as it did in 1993.
No, I mean, I think it definitely, like when you listen to this, I think you could at least kind of guess, you know, if you're knowledgeable on electronic music and stuff, and somehow didn't know Autechre. I think you could guess, you know, that this is an early 90s kind of record. You know, it has that sound in it. I don't think that's a necessarily bad thing, but like if this record came out today and it was not Autechre or something, and it, you know, it wasn't like, you know, like the Warp tapes that were old, so, you know, if this was a brand new record,
right?
You know, I'd say, oh, you know, not, yeah. I mean, it's hard to, you know, like, would I not enjoy the songs as much? Like, I think that, you know, they'd be just as enjoyable, but it would be like a little disappointing. You know, it'd be like somebody, remember that Venetian Snares record he made that was right, like the, what was that called? Traditional synthesizer music or something.
Yeah.
And it was like, I mean, I like that record. It was a good record.
Conscious throwback.
Yeah, but it was a conscious throwback. Exactly. So, I mean, if they played it as a conscious throwback, I guess it would be okay, but you know, I sort of even look at that like Venetian Snares record as like, you know, not like a real LP of his, you know, it's sort of like a, you know, an offshoot kind of thing, you know? I feel like I'm rambled a little there.
Well, I guess I just feel like, you know, it's, and we'll get into some of like the history and all that stuff in a minute, but I don't know. I feel like it's attained a little bit of like a cool vintage quality, like in the sense of, you know, kind of these like a Blade Runner or something, like these 80s like movies looking at the future. And it's clearly not the future, it's clearly the 80s idea of the future, but you know, this has like a similar, you know, I feel like it's a little bit in that, in the vogue of like making futuristic music, and I can imagine that it sounded pretty dated for a lot of people for a while, but now I feel like it's attaining just this like really cool like retro futurist vibe. So I don't know. I don't think it's dated at all, but I did see that complaint a lot. Let's maybe jump into a couple highlights of the record. First, though, I wanted to quiz you because I've got the, you know, I pay for the whatever, the Rate Your Music, whatever thing. It's like $5 a year or something. But then you get to see track ratings. And I wonder if you can guess what are the, we have three bolded tracks, three of the three highest bolded. Rated tracks here. What do you think they are?
Well, one, this surprised me, but I noticed that Bike is the highest listened song of theirs on Spotify by like a million plays.
Really?
Yeah. It's like a or like 100,000 more than the one before it. So maybe it was in a movie or something.
Yeah, maybe.
So I'll say Bike because of that. And then I'll say Bass Cadet because that was a single. And I think everybody loves that song. The third one, though. I'm trying not just to go with what I think. I don't know. Maybe Eggshell.
Well, it is Bike, Eggshell, and 444.
Oh, okay.
Which, by the way, did Jay-Z steal his album title from Offer 444?
That's probably a coincidence.
Never thought of that. anyway, okay. So those are like the whatever the consensus highlights, if you want to believe Rate Your Music, but. What are your highlights on this album?
You know, I really love, it's a hard one to say, Trichet?
Yeah.
The third track. It's like that that weird-ass car horn noise. It's like...
Yeah.
It's like so... If you talk about what it sounds like that's going to be incredibly stupid and cheesy, but
yeah.
I don't know. It's like I love... like. Whenever I'm like reading and you know, because a Bike is 8 minutes, the intro in I don't know if it's actually intro because it's got an L on the end of the word intro, but you know what I mean, it's three, you know, so you're a good 10-11 minutes into the record, you know, I'll be reading and I'm like, oh, boop 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 boop, you know, yeah. it gets you going there, so I really love that song.
Yeah, I mean, let me jump in and just to say that I think it's really interesting because that record feels, I mean, maybe it doesn't feel to you, but it feels to me like a little bit of an interlude kind of a track. It's pretty much beatless. It's just like, yeah, it's more like a noise composition or something, just like these thumping deep laser sounds or something. Mm-hmm. And then like, you know, some vocal sample work in there. There's like, yeah, just like an Android or something, you know, like, I don't know. But then you get these like kind of nice high, high thuds, but I wanted to ask, like, are these high horn type notes or whatever, but I wanted to ask, like, you know, do you feel like some of these tracks are working like interludes? You know, you've got the intro, you've got, you know, maybe Wind is something like an extended interlude kind of thing. Do you feel like we get, I don't know, there's a big distinction between the interlude tracks and the proper album tracks here?
You know, I was sort of thinking about that like earlier today. I would say yes, but then when you read like the quotes from the band that this is like sort of really they think of it as like a compilation of like old material and everything like that. That makes me think like it's probably not that, you know, if it wasn't written to be an album. But yeah. Also, yeah. You know, maybe they're full of shit too. So who knows? But no, yeah, I think without knowing that, I would agree that, yeah, some of these work as interludes, but I mean, I don't think that's a negative. I think in Ottaker's, you know, whole career, that's a way to get around talking about the future.
Although honestly, maybe I'm thinking more of like Broncos 2 as more of an interlude because, the Autriche does have that kind of like pretty bumping bass line going on there, but I guess it starts with like several minutes of like pretty drifting like interlude-y type feeling.
Yeah I mean it's got some interlude-y thing, but yeah, I think Branches 2 would be more of an interlude, but yeah I mean Wind's got a bit of it in there.
I guess it's just interesting how like I don't know, you can kind of tell like stuff like Bike and Eggshell, like don't those feel like the standouts, or Bass Cadet even, like,
oh yeah, I mean Bass Cadet was a single, you know, Eggshell, right. Is the song, one of the two songs that's on that Artificial Intelligence, the first mm-hmm. is I think it's called Egg, but it's basically
yeah
that,
it's
that
like
song.
An early version, yeah.
Yeah, you know, so I mean it definitely feels like those are the you know, quote, standout, you know, single kind of tracks here or whatever.
I guess I'm just like trying too hard not to break the rule, but what I mean is like as we move on in Ottaker's career, the distinction between what you would call an interlude track and a proper track like just vanishes, you know, like, oh, yeah, it doesn't even mean anything later.
No, I mean,
but here, maybe it's a,
once we get, you know, to around current day and stuff. Yeah. I mean, I think you'd be hard pressed to say what's a interlude and what's a, you know, regular track. Not, I don't mean that in a negative way for anyone.
Yeah. I just think it's interesting how like the highlights really stand out, but you were going to mention, something else. What are your other highlights?
Oh yeah. I mean, it like you said, it's the bolded one, but Bike really is like just that's a badass song. Yeah. You know, that's a great track. You said it. I love Eggshell. Really, yeah. There's not any song on this record I dislike. You know, there's Lower Lights, which we can get to, but I think every song on here at least is pretty good to great.
Yeah, I think so too. But I think that, I don't know, I just feel like such a normie because I feel like Bike, Eggshell, and 444 are the best songs here, and that's what consensus says. I mean, to me, like, those just really, really shine, and there's like really just interesting like little explorations and things, and some very cool tracks throughout. But I don't know, those just like pop as like kind of like you know, all time Autechre type tracks. Mm-hmm. Especially 444, I think, is like so brilliant. But let's talk about some of the weak spots here. You know, you've sort of mentioned it, and well, actually, let me quiz you. I wanted to quiz you before we get into this. What do you think is the low, or the, let's say the lowest, well, there's quite a bit of even the lowest rated track here. What do you think it is?
The lowest rated, I guess Low Ride. I'm gonna guess Low Ride.
Really?
Yeah,
that's such a banger. No, it is Broncos 2. Mm. And I also wanted to mention the Pitchfork kind of singles out Wind as a track that, exhausts with its 11-minute running time, like runs out of steam, they claim. Although it's not so, it's rated at a 3.8 on Rare Music, so maybe the fans don't agree. But what do you think about those as weak spots, or do you have your own weak spots here?
I think my weak spots are, even though it's like the single, you know, Bass Cadet, I like my Autechre without vocal samples, you know.
I was gonna single out Bass Cadet as like a song that I almost actively dislike for some reason.
Yeah, I'm close to disliking. It's probably my least favorite track here. I mean, it's not, again, it's not bad. It's just that the vocal sample, at first it's okay, you know. I would kind of prefer it's not there, but then at the end it like keeps happening, you know. It's like somebody's going crazy pushing the, you know, the button on the NPC or whatever. And you know, chill out. I guess Low Ride, because that one, that's kind of another song that I don't super love here. My biggest problem with it is it uses that like unchanged
piano.
No, the like 808 sound. Okay. I think it's the woodblock on it. And it's just like it's such a like sound that everybody knows what machine that came from, that it gets kind of distracting to me. And I'm again, one of the things I love about Autechre is like, especially later on, you know, is just like, how the fuck did they even like make that sound, you know? So it's like kind of disappointing when I'm like, oh, they used this, you know, specific thing.
Well, I was gonna say, you know, it's like, you know, it's interesting because actually a lot of tracks here, I think like Bike and, you know, Autreich even, and Eggshell, they have sort of like an 808 kind of drum sound to them. Lowride in particular does. And Lowride does have, you know, what jumped out to me was like, I mean, it just sounds like a proper, you know, MIDI piano, like that kind of funky, mm-hmm. like piano little riff is like, just seems like the pre-made piano setting or something. And it is interesting because, breaking the rule again, in a minute I'm going to throw the rule out. Yeah, but what becomes interesting is that, like, you are, you know, I am fascinated by the actual sound. So it's like on a first basic level, I'm like, the sounds that they are using are so incredible and so interesting. Now let me think about the track, mm-hmm. you know, like the piece that they've composed. But like, on this album, I feel like you don't really get a lot of that firsthand experience of like amazement by the sound of the thing, the sounds they're creating and the sound worlds they're creating, because I don't know, even like some of the more I would call experimental tracks like Wind or something, which is like consciously undanceable. You know, it's like really a kind of esoteric, like type of weirdo thing, in contrast to like Bass Cadet, which feels like kind of a, I don't know, something left over from their early Cavity Job days when they were trying to make like club bangers or whatever. But, you know, even those like weird experimental tracks, you know, doesn't it just kind of feel like, I don't know, like basic synth settings, you know, kind of like your basic high pass filter and stuff like that?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I mean, like I think I sort of mentioned earlier, you know, this feels a lot more like just your kind of standardish, you know, 90s warp kind of band, you know, like if this was an Aphex Twin record or, you know, something like that, like I would believe you. You know, like later on in their career, Ottaker becomes this like band, like creating like these crazy like noises, basically, you know, like that's, it sounds weird to say, but like, you know, and I'm going to break the rule. You know, I don't like specifically listen to like, XI or LSEC or, you know, NTS or anything, like, because the songs are like good, you know, I mean, they are, but it's like, I listen to it because like, I just want to hear those those noises, like the
it's like the sound design is so
exactly amazing. Like I that is like what I love about like Ottaker. Like that's why I like fell in love with the band. Like if this was their only record, it would be, you know, I think I'd feel about it how I feel about like things like Square Pusher, you know, like I like some Square Pusher records. They're, you know, they got a time and the place.
Right.
But, you know, I wouldn't call myself a huge fan. I wouldn't be doing a podcast about you know, every Square Pusher record, you know. But it's good enough, you know. Like, I like them. I I'm glad they got over this. But, I mean, you gotta crawl before you walk, or walk before you run, whatever the fuck the saying is.
Yeah, it's just interesting that, like, basically this is a record by, I think, like, musical geniuses. And yet it is lacking the sound design part of their genius. You know, I would believe you if you said that, like, oh, these two guys, like, their equipment got stolen, so they were just using like the Orbs equipment and made this, you know, or something. Like the basic sounds are not that interesting or unique, but what they do with them, I think, is very, very Ottaker. I don't think anything sounds quite like this. And we're going to get into that in just a second, but I wanted to kind of like defend Lowride a little bit, and this is going to sound pretentious as hell, but you know, I think that it's an interesting example of like the weird distance that you get from this album, which actually might even be heightened by the fact that they are using sort of traditional electronic sounds, because they have such a like weird icy coldness about the way they compose, you know, that it makes it just sound like, I don't know, sort of robotic, sort of alien. And this track is such a great example because, okay, it's called Lowride. Clear, you know, it's a giveaway, the title, that they are kind of aping like a West Coast hip hop kind of style. And it's pretty funky, honestly. That piano thing is like very funky. And those, like, you know, the little, whatever it is, the bell sound from the 808 is like, you know, kind of banging to me. But you would never confuse this with like a genuine Dr. Dre production or something, because it sounds so unhuman, you know, like with hip hop, you're not supposed to like think about it. You're kind of just supposed to like feel it, you know, it hits you on like a physical level. And this just feels like, you know, it feels like one of those memes. Like I had a AI like study 1,000 hip hop songs and then make one, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It feels like a machine has regurgitated this or something, and it's still pretty funky, but it is so like stilted and distant from like the gut level that hip hop beat should hit you on, that it's like an essay about making a hip hop song rather than an actual instrumental hip hop song. I mean, I know that sounds pretentious as hell, but like,
I mean, we're already doing a podcast on Ottaker. I don't think you have to worry about that too much,
but. You know, I know, I mean, some people are going to like hate that because I know some people really think that like Ottaker just slaps and like early Ottaker is just like fun club music or something. But like, I don't know, to me, there's this distance, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you feel that like distance?
Yeah. Yeah, of course. I mean, Ottaker always like in here, even like they always sound like, you know, it reminds me of, like, in, remember when the Terminator tries to learn to smile and he, you know, like
right,
he
right,
does
right.
it and it. but it's not right, you know.
Yeah.
Autecker is the Terminator learning to smile, you know. It's really like if some aliens heard, you know, Chronic, you know, doggy style, and then, you know, tried to make it or something. Yeah, like you might end up with low ride. You know, it's not wrong. It's almost like academic or something. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's like kind of cool, honestly. I think some people really hate that. But then I wanted to mention like Base Cadet as an example of where the distance is kind of gone. Like it feels like some people who are a little bit too like brainy trying to make a banger. And it's like a little, I don't know, it just sounds kind of dated. It just sounds like a little forced, you know, trying too hard to like create that rave up energy, that acid rave energy or something. And that for me is like the easy weak spot on the album. I would have a hard time complaining about pretty much anything else, even though maybe I do feel like the interlude tracks are a little bit like clearly less work was put into them than the obvious standout tracks. But how about as a whole on that note, talking about interludes and intros and stuff, you know, the sequencing of this record, do you think it feels like the compilation that they kind of describe it as, or do you feel like it's like a proper album, a proper introduction to Autechre?
Yeah, I mean, I honestly had never read that that quote until, you know, you wrote it in our little show notes or whatever. So I've always kind of considered this, you know, an album. I've never thought any other way about it. I think it like feels pretty cohesive. You know, maybe not as cohesive as they get like in later years, but I mean, it definitely sounds, you know, like. It sounds like thought was put into it, you know, in the sequencing. You know, that first song, like, obviously sounds like sort of, you know, some kind of introduction. You've got these, you know, little interludes that are seemingly strategically placed. You know, maybe even if it doesn't sound like or feel like the record was like composed as an entire record, it does at least feel like the track listing was composed in the sense that, you know, you don't put Bronchus and Win-Win, you know, right next to each other,
right,
or, you know,
right,
or even Base Cadet right next to Lower, you know, you got to like separate things and and whatnot. So I think even if it's like a, you know, mix or whatever, I think they at least put a good amount of effort into the sequencing.
Yeah. I mean, it's like pretty simple, pretty like rudimentary sequencing, but it feels to me like we got an intro with Kalpel Introl. We've got, you know, a couple tracks and then a little break interlude, like full interlude with Bronchus 2. I think you could consider Whirlwind kind of like an extended interlude. And then you've got, you know, like the big juggernaut type tracks like Bike and Eggshell and 444 are spaced out as well. I mean, it feels pretty intentional. I think it flows really well. I think it's got, I don't know, it just doesn't sound like, I don't know, I'm almost skeptical of them saying that. I could imagine that like Base Cadet was a little older than some of the other stuff, but I just feel like it sounds of a piece to me. It sounds like a really cohesive, like, this is us, this is our thing. And on that note, I want to sort of transition into like, I mean, we already gave up the rule a while ago, but like we'll fully give it up now. But I want to sort of talk about the scene that this comes from, you know, like the context around this record. You know, we sort of talked about it, but I think you can clearly hear that it kind of comes from the same world as, you know, Aphex, right? Like his Selected Ambient Works comes out the year before this. But like The Orb or Global Communication or like, I don't know, a lot of stuff that was like kind of happening in the early 90s. Mm-hmm. When you hear this, do you feel like, you know, maybe you already addressed this, but like this is a clear new thing that's happening? Or do you feel like you mentioned, like if this was their only album, you'd be like, oh, it's one of those type of albums?
I mean, I think it's knowing the future. I think it's easy to say, you know, like how you were talking about reviews do and stuff, like saying like, oh, you know, you can hear a little glimpse into what will become or whatnot. But I think if you didn't have that context, you know, if this was their only record, I don't think it would be like an incredible standout, like, oh, you know, everybody else is in 93 and, you know, they're 2003 or something. You know, it doesn't feel like that. It doesn't take away from the record. It's still a great record, I think. It's just, yeah, if it was their only thing, you know, this would be just like a cool gem you found, you know, that that everybody didn't know about. And you know, it'd be a cool record. But I don't think it's like, oh, I you know, clearly I see, you know, LSEC, you know, on the horizon here or anything, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how much it like would stand out if it was their only record, but you know, again, I feel like it's like the sound fits right in with that era. Nothing really new about the sound of it, but like the compositions, there's something remarkably minimalist about it, remarkably repetitive about it, remarkably kind of brainy about it, like icy and distant. And yeah. On that note, I think we got to talk about, you know, the genre a little bit. And first off, let me say that, you know, we mentioned at the top, but we're not experts. And I've just, in my experience, I've just found that like electronic music obsessives are like some of the biggest dicks on the planet, you know, like, that's not, you know, minimal techno, that's tech house, you fucking idiot. You know? So like, I don't know all that shit that well, but it clearly comes from like sort of an ambient techno, Detroit techno, like kind of from the late 80s scene. But what this album really represents, I think, is a shift into IDM. And I think we got to talk about that term IDM a little bit. You know, it stands for intelligent dance music, of course, and it's pretty widely hated, as you mentioned, because it sort of implies that other dance music is stupid or something like that, and that only these, you know, couple white guys on Warp Records were making intelligent dance music. So, you know, totally problematic and everything. But at the same time, I want to sort of defend this a little bit, because if you look at the artificial intelligence mission statement, right, like Warp releases this compilation, and then they release a series of albums as part of the artificial intelligence series. It includes Incunabula, but also like Polygon Windows, Surfing on Sine Waves, Bites by Black Dog Productions, Electrosoma by B12, some other interesting stuff, another compilation, Artificial Intelligence 2. And the mission statement is kind of like to exhibit the capabilities and sounds of electronic music. It's like electronic listening music as opposed to dance music. It's meant for the more for the mind than the body. And it's really interesting that the artwork of that artificial intelligence compilation, it shows like this android is kind of like sleeping or just chilling, listening to, you know, Kraftwerk and Pink Floyd. There's a third record that I can't figure out what it is, but you can clearly see Audubon and Dark Side of the Moon. And I think it's kind of revolutionary, because what I feel is that it must have been typical at this time to sort of dismiss electronic music as, you know, stuff for clubs, you know? And Warp and Autechre, I think, are kind of making this stand like, no, we're artists, this is serious art. I mean, do you think that you can defend that at all? Or is like the whole idea of IDM just dumb?
I mean, I think IDM is just like, it's an unfortunately named thing. I get what they mean. Because yeah, it is listening music, you know, this is music for your house, not music for the club. Often not even music for your car, you know? And I think like it also makes more sense in the context of like the early 90s. Like the early 90s had like all these sort of, you know, kind of one hit wonder, not fully electronic, but like, you know, techno-y kind of songs that were like big, you know, like late at night you'd see on TV like those compilations, like jock jams and stuff, and it if you went to any sporting event, it was the kind of things you would hear played.
Because like electronic music was kind of a novelty.
Yeah, right? Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah, that perfect. Yeah, it was like a novelty kind of thing. The same way, you know, with hip hop, you know, like it started as like this kind of underground thing, and then there was stuff like Vanilla Ice and MC Hammer and shit like that on the radio. And I think like, you know, the IDM kind of label, I think, is like a reference to that kind of stuff. Which like, unfortunately, yeah, Today nobody thinks about, like, because that stuff is all but forgotten. So it does sort of, when you say IDM, it seems like much more, you know, problematic, because it's like you're dismissing other forms of dance music. But I always kind of take it as like as a diss on like that legitimately shitty, you know, kind of radio techno thing that got big.
Or also, I mean, I know, like, because people hate it, because I think that, like, a lot of these, like, Warp artists, they are heavily inspired by, you know, black Detroit techno artists, and then they have the nerve to be like, well, we're not like them, this is intelligent, yeah, you know, music. And I get that, but I just don't feel like Warp was trying to be exclusionary. I really believe that they were like trying to lift the genre from novelty status in the minds of most listeners, which, you know, this always happens. Like in retrospect, that Detroit techno stuff from the late 80s is like not novelty at all. It's
no,
like
exactly,
brilliant.
Yeah.
But you don't realize that until you kind of like legitimize the genre. So you think about something like, I don't know, it's like a Sgt. Pepper's moment, I think, the artificial intelligence compilation. It's like Sgt. Pepper's was like, hey, this is art, you know, pop music can be art. You should treat it like art. And with that newfound respect of pop music, we can go back and we can listen mm-hmm. to like the Ronettes and stuff and be like, this is fucking brilliant. This is like, this is art, you know, but you need that kind of watershed moment. I feel like artificial intelligence was that. I don't feel like Warp was trying to like exclude music. They were trying to lift it up. You know, they are drawing a distinction between music for the body and music for the mind, but I think that's kind of cool and interesting to just demand to be like, hey, some dance music is for fun, but this, treat it like your favorite Pink Floyd record. Like, put your headphones on and listen closely. Like, to me, that's kind of cool, actually.
Yeah, because, I mean, at this time, exactly, like, I don't think there was many, you know, electronic things that you did think of as, like, you know, this is sit at home, listen, you know, put your headphones on kind of thing. I mean, obviously, Kraftwerk, you know, predates this by a lot, but Kraftwerk, yeah. I think, it, you know, I mean, I was only six in 93, but, you know, I don't think they were as well known in America as they are, you know, today. And even today, you know, it's not like they're huge or anything. You know, so I think you're right. You know, that I don't think it's just an unfortunate name, you know, intelligent dance. You know, they could have come up with something a little, you know, with a little bit more.
Yeah,
I can't think of the word, but you know what I mean? It seems very like when you say like intelligent dance music, it seems very, you know, kind of pretentious and like off-putting and exclusionary. Like you said, you know, it seems like you're saying like, well, all that other stuff is stupid, you know, but I think like you said, I don't think that's exactly what they meant. It's just not, it's not phrased in the greatest way.
Yeah. They just wanted to be like taken seriously. And
yeah,
honestly, you can like complain about the name all you want, but it's like, they accomplished it, you know, like that's what happened in the '90s. And I think Autechre, I mean, if you look at like the artificial intelligence series, you know, this album is the best and, in my opinion, most like, you know, important of that group.
Yeah.
And, you know, probably just did a lot for like changing people's perception of electronic music and getting them to take it seriously. You know, at the same time, I wonder, I don't know, I can just imagine, I have no idea, but I could just totally imagine that like Autechre would hate that idea now, that they would not see any distinction between what they do and what people like Jeff Mills do and stuff like that. But when you listen to this album, just based on the evidence that your ears are getting listening to Incunabula, do you feel like they bought into the artificial intelligence mission statement?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like I said, I before we even were doing this podcast, you know, I was using this record to sit at home at night and read a book while listening to it and everything. And yeah. I mean, I do that with a lot of Autechre. You know, like I also said, some of the future stuff gets a little too, you know, distracting for reading for me.
Right.
But, you know, yeah, I think like definitely, you know, this Autechre is not something I listen to in the car much, mostly because of my wife. But, you know, it's you know, it's not maybe this record a little bit, but, you know, later stuff and whatnot, you know, it is sort of like sit at home, you know. Put on your headphones and, you know, have a good time. It's kind of like the thing. Like if I bought like a, you know, brand new fancy pair of headphones, you know, one of the first things I'm going to listen to is an Autechre record, you know, maybe right. Not this one, you know, cause it's not, you know, a favorite, but, you know, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, I just feel like this album sort of demands to be listened to closely.
Yeah.
And in that respect, I feel like they kind of, you know, they were on board. I think that they were like, I don't know, maybe actively trying to lift electronic music into that space. You know, like this Autechre album deserves to be on your record shelf right alongside Pink Floyd and Kraftwerk or whatever. And you know, I think they succeed. And honestly, it was like I feel like before this week, I was like really I was just going to like go on a tirade about how dumb the name IDM is. But then the more I thought about it, I was like, it's really cool that that happened. Like, thank God that happened, because, you know, and maybe it's inevitable. And I was just thinking about stuff, you know, like, I don't know, every genre needs this moment, this like moment where it's like, oh, now we're taking it seriously. You know, it happened with hip hop, like you mentioned. Yeah. It happened with like even like the music video or something. Like, people didn't take music videos seriously until like, I don't know, Michael Jackson made fucking Thriller or whatever. And then it's like, oh shit, these are art, you know? So I think that's cool. I think that makes this a cool moment in history. You know, I think we'll return to some of those questions when we get to maybe some of their earlier work in a minute. But I do think we should sort of touch on the idea. I don't know, maybe it's just sort of bogus, but you mentioned it. But do you really feel like you can hear hints at what Autechre would become in this record, Incunabula?
Like I said, you know, without context, I don't think at all. I think when you're looking for it, you can say something like Wind being like 11 minutes and pretty minimal and everything. You can say like, oh, you know, see, you know, that's pointing at it. Or, you know, there's little moments here and there where there's like Bronchus 2, I think, has like sort of that atmospheric like kind of feel to it and all. That's like the slightest peek at, you know, later Autechre and all. But I think it's like you're really sort of looking for it. You know, I don't think there's anything here that's like blatantly in your face, you know, obviously, you know, late Autechre.
Yeah, I just think it's like a lot of this record is, I mean, we've mentioned it before, but it's like the 808 is an instrument.
Mm-hmm. You know,
it's like
exactly
a piano or a guitar. It has a certain sound and you cannot really like deviate too much from that sound. And a lot of the tracks here are using like that instrument and I don't know, I'm doing some creative stuff with it, but it's like, I just feel like that is so like counter to the, what becomes the Autechre aesthetic. And maybe our mind will change as we like kind of move chronologically, you know, spending a lot of time with like each step in Autechre. But I just feel like, I don't know, it's, you hear some of their, some of like that kind of early to mid period, like compositional style, but I just don't know. I just like, whenever I read these reviews, they're like, oh, if you listen to like this note, you can really hear like where Autechre would be heading. Yeah. Like, oh, whatever. So let's sort of sum up. How did it go revisiting this? I don't know how long it had been since you listened to it, but you know, how'd you sum up your feelings about Autechre this time around, or Incunabula more specifically?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I was doing it before I even, you know, we had this idea for the podcast. So I enjoyed it. I probably wouldn't have spent 2 weeks, on it, you know, I would have moved on to other records, but it's not like I didn't get tired of it. I didn't you know, think, ah, you know, just want to move on to Amber already or anything like that. You know, I completely enjoyed it, and in fact, like, you know, I don't think, because Autechre is a band that I found you know, much later into their career, you know, by the time I started listening to them, they already had like a ton of records. You know, I don't think I've ever spent like that much, you know, like really like with a magnifying glass, like on every track, you know, trying to, you know them well enough to, you know, speak about. So, you know, I enjoyed it and look forward to doing it with the rest.
Yeah. I mean, I guess like diving into it this week, like really spending a long time with it. Yeah, I was struck by some things that are like, you know, just, I don't know, like amazing in a way that I hadn't appreciated it in a while because I've listened to it mm-hmm. so much. But just like I mentioned, that kind of like crazy distance between the, you know, crazy complexity of the percussion and like the completely motionless like synth pads. It's like, I don't know, it's like a mind fuck. And I just like appreciate it like even more this time around. At the same time, I do think I was like a little more aware of the formulaic quality that we were talking about earlier, where it's like every track is kind of working the same way. It's like, you know, you prepare a couple things and fade them in and out and tweak the knobs a little bit. But again, limitations of the hardware, but it's like, that's the only thing that makes it feel a little stiff, maybe like a little less dynamic than some of their later work. Would you though call this album a classic, like a masterpiece, or what would you call it?
No, I wouldn't go that far. You know, it's like a second tier Autechre, you know, kind of classic. Mm. Like if somebody wanted to get into the band, you know, I wouldn't say start here. You know, I think obviously, you know, Tri Repete is sort of the one that people look at as that, you know, kind of starting point thing most of the time. But I think it's definitely like, you know, if you liked that, if you're getting into this group, you like these records, I'd say, you know, definitely, you know, that would be in my second little list, you know, that I would give them would to be hit this one. Or even, I mean, honestly, even if somebody just kind of got into like the other Warp stuff and they didn't want to get too experimental, I think it'd be a great one to listen to. So I'd say it's like a second tier classic. I'd give it like an 8.8 out of 10, maybe.
Yeah, I'm kind of like, I don't know, I'm a little conflicted because I feel like it is sort of second tier Odd-Tekker, but it's like must listen for everybody. It's like, to me, like, don't even bother with the Artificial Intelligence compilation, which is not as good as this.
Yeah, I agree with that, yeah.
You need to know that moment, I think, in music history, and the best way to learn about it is this record, and that makes it like everybody needs to hear it, like no matter who you are. And yet, you know, so normally I would give like a 10 to something like that, you know, that's like, this is canon, mm-hmm. you must know it. And yet I do still feel like maybe it's just, I'm just biased because I know about where Odd-Tekker is heading, but it's like second tier Odd-Tekker. So maybe that just is testament to how great Odd-Tekker is, but it's like simultaneously a 10 and probably like a 8.6, 8.7 or something like that. Okay. You ready to move on to Cavity Job?
Yeah, let's do it. So 2 years before Incunabula in 1991, Odd-Tekker released their debut EP, Cavity Job, for Hardcore Records. It didn't make much of an impact, probably because the pressing was limited to about 1,000 copies, but now it's widely available on the EP's 1991-2002 compilation, and most seem to agree that it is pretty unremarkable. It's sitting at a 2.58 out of 5 on Rate Your Music. Still, we thought we should spend a little bit of time on their true origins. So was this record new to you at all?
It pretty much was. I mean, I've always kind of thrown on the, you know, that EPs collection. It's something I really like to just kind of like listen to. But I must admit that I often skip past like all of the Bass Cadet remixes, which are like right after this, mm-hmm. you know? And so I'm probably, you know, starting a little later, and this is probably something I've listened to like a handful of times, even though I've listened to that collection a lot and probably by accident listened to this without even realizing I was. But what about you?
Yeah, sort of similar. You know, I've definitely listened to it. I've never like sat with a fine comb like I did this week or right. 2 weeks with it, you know. Obviously from that compilation, you know, I've heard it, but I mean, I'll go ahead and say it. It's not the greatest record in the world, you know, so I will skip it on those. And you know, I like that that set. So it's another one, you know, I'll read to. So like you, I've probably listened to this more times without realizing it than I know.
Yeah, it's interesting because in the research that I was doing, it sounds like this was sort of like a mythical thing, you know, before that compilation came out. Like people were like, Cavity Job, like their first single, like I've heard it's so cool, man, like blah, blah, you know, like and nobody had heard it. And then, and maybe there were some like, probably there were some vinyl rips floating around online and stuff, but if you weren't like that kind of a musical pirate or something, you probably never heard it. And then in 2011 all of a sudden it's like widely available and everybody was just kind of like meh, you know. And that was like that's what's happened to Cavity Job. You know, I want to try to describe the sound of this. I mean, it's really a single, right? It's kind of like an A side and a B side, yeah. But it's considered an EP. But I mean, it's a beefy like 12 minutes, you know, 12 and a half minutes here. But you know, the sound is, I don't know. It's like, it's kind of like the things we were complaining about Bass Cadet turned up to 11, you know, it's yeah. really got like a hip hop, like kind of breakbeat kind of vibe. You know, I guess Odd-Tekker kind of comes out of the B-boy scene a little bit, which is so
yeah, that's
funny
crazy,
to fucking
yeah.
imagine. That they're like into breakdancing and like doing graffiti and stuff. We'll talk about like Lego Feet in a minute, but it's like the album art is like, you know, that kind of graffiti style. Uh-huh. You know, this is like where their very first releases are coming from, and probably like the circles they're in and stuff. And like, you know, it sounds kind of built for that. I mean, how would you describe like these songs here?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like kind of amateur, to be honest. You know, it sounds yeah. like people who are hanging around, you know, places that play acid house and acid techno and stuff, and then basically trying to ape that. You know, having the equipment, having the like ability. You know, it's not like it's bad. It's just, it's unremarkable. You know, it's just, it sounds like an acid house, you know, record that if it did not have the name Ottekker attached to it, this would just be, you know, it might have got, you know, if there was 1,000 copies of it, you know, maybe somebody would find it as a crate digger and, you know, use it as a sample or something, but it would be like even more obscure than it already is. You know, it's not like this would be a hidden gem that people would say, oh, you got to get your hands on it or anything. You know, people wanted their hands on it and to this day want their hands on it because it says Ottekker.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, the biggest problem is what we talked about with the bass cadet, with like the vocal samples, mm-hmm. like the clipped up vocal samples. It's got particular, like, it's got a little bit of a singing clip, like looping yeah. on particularly the track Cavity Job. You know, it reminds me of that kind of like, what is that song? It's like, you know, the sample's like, woo, ah, and it's like, da da da, to make a thing go right.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's one of those kind of songs I was talking about earlier, like an early yeah, 90s, right. you know, radio track.
It sounds like that kind of terrible shit, honestly. Like, and then I will say, in its defense, though, that like the track Cavity Job and Accelera 1 and 2, they both sort of do this where it's like that really annoying, shitty, like breakdance to this. And then there's like a weird kind of like more pensive little interlude kind of thing for like several bars. Mm-hmm. And then it'll kind of jump back into that thing. Like, it's like the verses are honestly Ottekker, like, to me, where especially the like second kind of breakdown part of Cavity Job. I mean, it doesn't last a long time, but it's like, if that was on NTS, like, I would believe it. Like, it would not even sound out of place, because I mean, NTS has a couple of like, kind of throwbackish sounds, I think, on it. But do you agree with that? Like, there are a couple like little just glimpses on those weirder parts that are not the like shitty b-boy stuff. They're sort of like intriguing. It would make me be like, you know, maybe this band will do something.
I like how you were pissed about people doing that with Incunabula, and you just immediately do it with Cavity Job.
It's hard with this. It's,
no,
I'm grasping,
I know. I'm
just straws here.
Yeah, kidding. But no, I feel you. There are like, there's those little moments where you're like, man, why didn't they just do that for the whole, you know, 13 yeah. minutes of this EP? And then I think it would have been like something that was a lot more worth hearing and would have been neat. And if, you know, if this was their only release, you know, it would be like sort of worth finding and maybe become a hidden gem. But yeah, I mean, like, when I listen to this, I like really get the sense of like, you know, it's like two young kids that are like really, you know, into a specific scene or whatever, and just like wanting to be a part of that. But what's odd is, because, you know, this, I don't know when this was recorded, you know, but I mean, it comes out in 1991. And, you know, I don't want to get into Lego Feet because we're going to talk about that, but, you know, it's earlier than this. And then, you know, there's that Warp Tape collection that came out last year, on NTS. And it, like, doesn't sound like this, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So it's like, unless this was recorded, like, even before that, you know, I don't know. It's like, it seems like very anachronistic with, like, what I do know of like Ottekker's beginnings and everything. Like,
I mean, it was on like Hardcore Records, and I don't know much about it, but I just wonder if like this is what Hardcore Records did and these are the pieces that they wanted to put out, you know, and they were like, we're gonna market you guys like b-boys, you know.
Yeah.
And that was like the initial kind of thing, because yeah, we'll get into Lego Feet in a minute, but it just feels like very targeted toward a specific scene.
Yes.
And really, I'm not bullshitting. I think people are bullshitting when they talk about like Incunabula as like hints at things to come, but I feel like those little, anytime the like shitty vocal loop sample thing is not happening, those parts are pretty intriguing, like pretty cool, honestly. There's like a part in Accelera where there's like just a huge synth wall kind of like rises out of nowhere, and all of a sudden, for just a second, feels like as big as some of the tracks on Incunabula, like just like mammoth towering things, and then it gets back to like, whoa, ha, you know, like shit. So I did kind of want to ask, though, you know, this kind of gets back into the IDM topic, but it's like, I was thinking about it, and I have to admit to myself that if I was at, you know, next time I'm at Smart Bar in Chicago, or like some club like that plays kind of electronic music and stuff, if Cavity Job comes on, you know, I'm gonna be dancing my ass off, just, you know. And it's like, Is it possible that this music just, it actually does work like for the, for its intended purpose? Like it's like a hype up acid rave kind of like hip hop breakbeat thing. And it's just not in the home listening world. And that's why we think so poorly of it.
I think that, you know, that's actually a good, you know, a good point. You know, maybe this is pre artificial intelligence. And yeah, maybe this isn't supposed to be at home listening. And because, you know, it's associated with Autechre, we've kind of tried to force it into that, you know, mold.
Right.
Where, cause yeah, you're right. You know, if I was at a club or something, if I ever am able to again, you know, like,
yeah.
And this came on, like, yeah, I would, I think my opinion of it would be much higher. You know, it would be fun. It would be,
right.
In 1991, it would have been better than, you know, whatever that song you were singing a minute ago is,
yeah,
and stuff, you know, so yeah, I mean, maybe you're right, you know, maybe we've just forced it into this mold that it was never meant to be a part of or should be a part of.
Yeah, I just think like, I'm like, wow, this sounds like shit when I'm sitting at my desk with like my nice headphones on,
yeah,
you know? But it really doesn't feel like it was made for that purpose, and it would probably work really well in the setting that it was made for. But, you know, that gets back to like the biases around IDM, and the reason why people have such a problem with that term is like, you know, it is kind of bullshit, right? That we like privilege music. You know, I kind of think I have this bias where it's like, I think like, okay, stuff can sound great live, you know, or like I have a great time dancing to this track somewhere. But if it doesn't hold up at home, then it wasn't really a good song. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of like a major problem.
Yeah, I mean, and maybe that's like sort of the issue with IDM, like the title of IDM, like we were talking about, you know, like calling like music for at home like intelligent implies that music that's not for home is not intelligent, you know, is stupid, right, or something. But you're right. Yeah, I mean, because there's plenty of songs that, you know, when we used to go out to, you know, clubs and stuff, I was stoked when they would come on. But, you know, I think that one like Britney Spears song was always really rad, where she's like driving in a convertible or something and there's like a robot involved. you know, I used to love when that song would come on, but I mean, I don't even know the name of it, and I would never listen to it at home. I would never listen to it in the car, but yeah, I mean, I think you're right. You know, I think stuff that isn't for home like loses respect sometimes.
Yeah, I just remember thinking about this on our other podcast when we talked about Prince's 1999, you know, like that track, like DMSR, like dance music, mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't have a lot to it, the song, but I know for a fact that if I was like, you know, if in 1983 I was like at a live Prince show,
oh,
and
yeah,
he was playing that,
it'd
shit,
be so
like,
rad.
I would lose it. It does not hold up like just sitting at home, because it's like pretty repetitive and it's just a groovy beat and like not much songwriting went into it, I don't think, but... You know, it just feels weird. Like, why do I, that's music for your body. Whereas IDM, if you want to call it that, is music for your brain. And I don't know why I totally privilege music for the brain. You know, I don't think any of this saves Cavity Job, to be honest, but, I just wanted to acknowledge that, you know, we might have some biases here.
Yeah, I get that. And I agree. I don't think it saves it, but yeah, I mean, I agree with you.
All right, we ready to move on to Lego Feet?
Yeah. It probably would have made more sense to talk about Lego Feet before Cavity Job, but we wanted to end on a slightly higher note. Lego Feet was Autechre's first official release before they were even called Autechre, but like Cavity Job, it was extremely hard to get a hold of until Scam Records re-released the album in significantly expanded form in 2011. It's not super acclaimed. It's got a 3.24 on Rate Your Music, but fans seem to agree that it's a lot better than Cavity Job, at least.
Yeah, so had you ever listened to this Lego Feet record before?
Yeah, I had. Well, sort of. I had a vinyl rip of it. I if anybody, you know, listens to our other podcast, Pop Shield, I hate bonus tracks. I despise it. And so I didn't even have the expanded one. I only had a vinyl rip that I got from what CD, you know, years ago. And I had to listen to it. And in fact, I actually, when I started, you know, going through the Autechre stuff before, you know, the idea of this podcast, I actually was listening to this record, you know, the just the two sides, you know, vinyl.
Yeah.
So I had listened to this. How about you?
I had never listened to this before, ever. I didn't even like really know what it is. You know, I knew that there was like a lot of there's a lot of like early stuff that I just wasn't aware of, and I would not have been interested in it, honestly, if I hadn't really gotten into the Warp Tapes from last year. But yeah, once we did this, I was like, well, I better check that out. And you know, I'll just spoil and say I was like delightfully surprised. I think particularly in this sort of expanded form, you know, it's almost as long as Incunabula.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like this mammoth presentation of, I don't know, just like early Autechre, like being as creative as possible. So did you spend much time with the extended one? And maybe you can try to describe the sound of it.
Yeah, I because those two new, you know, I'll call them tracks, but I mean, they're essentially like sides of vinyl with songs, you know, mixed all in. You know, they're sort of like, yeah, DJ mix kind of things. So I had not heard those two tracks until we started doing this. But, you know, as far as the sound, yeah, I mean, it's so weird. Like, I didn't want to get into it since we did Cavity Job first. You know, this comes before Cavity Job, and yet it sounds so creative and so like a precursor to Incunabula, whereas like Cavity Job, you know, sounds like some kids that are just, you know, learning how to program a synth or something. It blows my mind, you know. It makes me not understand Cavity Job at all.
Right. Yeah, I feel exactly the same way. I mean, I think this is like brilliant. This record is like unbelievably good. It's, you know, it's weird because it's like, yeah, it's got like a kind of you know, lo-fi kind of sound, mm-hmm, where you can definitely hear that it's earlier than Incunabula, which sounds like really, I mean, it's got like kind of a vintage sound, but Incunabula sounds like extremely clean, like just like state-of-the-art,
yeah,
kind of tech. And this has like a very like lo-fi, like recorded to tape kind of vibe. It is a mixture of like, you know, just, it feels like just a ton of sketches. Like some are definitely longer than others, but some are like just very, very short little ideas. And there isn't like a ton of effort to mix them together. Like it's like the thing will kind of like build up, fall apart, and then in that kind of like droney mess,
yeah,
here emerges like a new thing. Or sometimes it just comes to like a complete stop, you know? And I think what that does is it just makes it feel like, I don't know, it makes it feel like so creative, because it's like, unlike Cavity Job or even some parts of Incunabula, it's like, it's just interesting to hear them do what I think they will spend their entire career doing, which is like, they found an interesting sound and then they're like building something out of that, you know? It wasn't like, okay, we got to have the drum track, we got to have the bass track, we got to have the synth track, you know, which Incunabula has that slightly formulaic quality. Some of these tracks are just like a weird, like squelchy little thing. And they were like, I love that. Let's build something. It's only interesting for 30 seconds. Okay, let's move on to the next thing. Like, that's very cool to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is. It is really cool. And that's what's so strange about it. That I mean, there's parts of this that are like much more experimental than Incunabula, but exponentially so with Cavity Job, because you're right, you know, like we talked about with Incunabula, like what we really come to love with Autechre later on is like how they're just like building these sounds, and like the sound, yeah, is like first and foremost, you know. Here, like we're kind of getting that a little bit, you know, like we,
yeah,
not completely, you know, it's nothing like, you know, what will come, but I mean, I think the footprints of later Autechre are like much more visible here than they are in Incunabula. You know, with these, yeah, I mean, there's like on Rate Your Music, it has like a little you know, track times kind of thing, which I think is just completely fan made, you know, but a lot right, a lot of them are, you know, are 20 seconds, 40 seconds, you know, 5 seconds, kind of little things, and that is cool, you know, like it is really neat, you know. I think if you, yeah, had only heard Cavity Job because it's on that compilation thing, whereas this is not, I think you'd kind of come into this like thinking it would just be a longer version of Cavity Job, and he wouldn't be excited for it, you know, much at all.
Right.
But it's really a shame that this isn't on that that release. I guess, you know, Scam Records or whatever maybe still exists. Yeah. But you know, it's really a shame that this is sort of the like much more obscure, harder to find kind of thing. Like I mean, I remember searching for that, you know, vinyl rip that I had for so long, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know, it's kind of, it's interesting because it's not like trying to push that like rave up energy.
Yeah,
really, there are a couple moments that are like pretty in high intensity, but there are moments on Incunabula that are kind of high intensity.
Yeah, of
like,
course,
talking about much about Doctrine, but Doctrine is like a full percussion workout. Like there's almost no melody there at all. It's just like crazy slamming beats. But it has like very pensive moments overall. I think it's got kind of like a slower, moodier vibe. And again, it's like, I don't, like it couldn't have been on their mind at the time. Probably wasn't, but it's like, it feels like it's sort of for home listening, because otherwise what the fuck is this for? Like, did they expect somebody to put this like part one on at the club or something? Or like, did they expect people to like kind of draw little things on their 12 inch that's like, oh, start it here because that 30 second thing is like really fun, you know? Like, nobody was gonna do it. What was this for other than to like just listen to it and be inspired by like the worlds of sounds that they're just kind of like running through? And in that respect, it's so interesting because it's kind of like a precursor to NTS Sessions or something, or like some of the like LSEC, the jammier sort of like, let's just put everything out there and people can wade through it and get inspired by what they want to, you know, get inspired by. It's like just this sample pack of, you know, just as many ideas as they could fit on this thing. And on that note, it is also really, really interesting. You know, we probably shouldn't get into this now. We'll get into it much later, but it's like, it's crazy that Incunabula is sort of a major moment in the like albumification of electronic music,
yeah.
You know, like, we're artists, we make albums, like sit down and listen to a front to back, you know? And then Autechre, by the time we get to like 2015, 2016, they're just destroying the idea of the album entirely, you know? And so, you know, knowing that that's where they're heading, they're going to circle back around to Lego Feet. It makes like Lego Feet fucking amazing.
Mm-hmm. No, I know I like just don't understand it at all. You know, like because you're right. Like this so much feels like the home listening, you know, artificial intelligence kind of thing. It's I don't know. It's just so crazy. I wish some of the, like, you know, we have some of it now with the Warp Tape release, which, you know, I think is like much more similar to Lego Feet and all. But there's a couple of other like things that, you know, one, the rest of those tapes, and then like the, there's like a single that like nobody has ever found or heard or anything. And like, I would love to hear that, because I want to know, like, was it more Cavity Job or was it Lego? You know, it's just like, I don't know. It just seems like to like two different sets of people like made each of these records, you know, like I said, it just, Cavity Job feels like some kids just starting out, like, you know, getting their feet wet, where Lego Feet like really just almost seems, I mean, it's not perfectly fully formed, you know, it's not like as good as Autechre or like as an album or anything, but it's much more fully formed than Cavity Job.
Yeah, I don't know, it makes me really feel like Cavity Job was them being kind of put into some sort of box that they didn't exactly fit in, and that if left to their own devices, they would be like kind of moving a lot faster toward what they would actually become. But yeah, I mean, I think it's like, it's just an incredible, incredible record. I do think that, you know, I hesitate to get too much into the Warp Tapes because we do want to like give that its due later on, but it's like, I don't know, Warp Tapes is more like, it's more of a proper mix. Like it just kind of keeps flowing and like things are mixed together. I think it's like, what makes this almost even more interesting is that it like comes to screeching halts and just like totally changes directions, or like nothing, even like the longer pieces, they don't stay the same for like more than 30 seconds at a time. Like they're just always changing.
Right.
It just feels like this 75 minutes of just like a rush of ideas from like really creative people. You know, it could be kind of interesting. Maybe, you know, cause once we get through the whole thing, this is like months and months from now, We could do like an episode that's like Lego Fee versus Warp Tapes or something like that.
Yeah, that would be fun. I purposely like didn't listen to the Warp Tapes so that I didn't, you know, get too into comparing them or anything. So yeah, that definitely would be fun.
Yeah, well, okay, so I think we should start wrapping up here. I wanted to mention that, you know, at the end of every episode, our goal is to kind of rank everything that we've talked about so far. But not like everything, like, you know, I think we should determine what is rank worthy, you know, so Cavity Job, probably no point in like adding it to the whatever the tier list of Autechre. But I wonder, I mean, do you think Lego Feet is like a rank worthy? Obviously, Incunabula is, but does Lego Feet belong on our ranking?
I mean, I want to say yeah, but only because I like it, you know, otherwise, like, I mean, it's a different band name. Like, would I rank Guestcom stuff like? Probably not, yeah. You know, so it's like when I think of it that way, like I lean towards no, but I guess it's our podcast. I mean, and we can make the rules.
We're going to break the rules a lot, I think, on this. Because we're going to be ranking a lot of things. But I mean, do you feel like there's any chance that Lego Fee would be ahead of any like main Autechre album?
Not more than an album, but I think there's maybe some EPs that it's better than, you know, definitely some of the singles. I think it's much better than, but yeah, probably not a record at all. No.
Yeah. It's, I mean, I think it's safe to say that it's underrated and that if you haven't listened to it, you definitely should, and definitely check out that like expanded version because it's just something about like the overwhelming like size of it, the amount of ideas that I think just, cause I listened to like the vinyl rip that you sent me and it was like, you know, same thing obviously, but it's like,
smaller, yeah.
The presentation is just not so like, it doesn't bowl me over, like knock me on my ass like this 2011 version does. So maybe it does need to be ranked. I guess we can probably say that our ranking so far is Incunabula and then Lego Fee.
Yeah.
But just thinking ahead, you kind of mentioned it as like a second tier, but where would you guess Incunabula will end up? Like,
oh, as
middle of the pack or something?
Yeah, towards the top of the middle, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, towards the top of the middle.
I'm really not sure because I feel like my whole life I would have said it's like upper, you know, it's probably like top five, top six or something. But I think we're gonna learn a lot. We're probably gonna change some opinions on this. And on that note, any closing thoughts on this this opening chapter of our trip through Autechre's entire discography?
No, just that, I mean, you know, it was a lot of fun. Maybe not as fun to dive so deep into Cavity Job, but it definitely was like, I'm definitely looking forward to getting to the records that I'm not, you know, as innately familiar with and everything. Especially some of those EPs, like you said, there's some I've probably only listened to two or three times, you know. So I'm definitely excited to find some new, you know, gems or whatnot that I'll add to my rotation for listening.
Yeah, I feel like we're off to a good start because I feel like I've already added Lego Feet to like this lost masterpiece I had no idea existed. But I'll just say as a little preview here that I have never, I'm ashamed to admit this, I have never really gotten into like Confield, you know, Gantz graph, draft 730, that kind of like period when they get like super bizarre has never been my favorite. So like I'm really excited to force myself to like spend a ton of time with those. Choristus I've never particularly liked, but you know, it's gonna be tough, but it's gonna be fun.
Yeah. All right. Well, what do you think about Incunabula, Cavity Job, and Lego Feet? We'd love to read your thoughts on the air. Email us gonkcastpod@gmail.com. Next episode, we're going to do it every 2 weeks. So we'll see you in 2 weeks with Amber and the Anti-EP. So go ahead, listen along. Send us your opinions ahead of time if you want. gonkcastpod@gmail.com. If you like the show, help us out by subscribing. Leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast. Stay connected on Twitter, Instagram. That is @GonkCastPod, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
See ya.